Hi, everyone. Russ Thomas here from RST Coaching Academy. Welcome to a new episode of Money Talks, where we talk about money and how to make more of it.
Hey, good morning, everybody there in internet land. This is Russ with RST Coaching Academy with another interview from some new friends of mine. We are hosting today Money Talks, and I'm talking to a couple that are originally from Scotland, are now in Dubai. Their names are Graham and Leanne Carling. And so they've got a story for you that'll probably blow your mind, a little bit of suspense, a little bit of crisis, and a lot of success in the end result. And so I want to introduce them to you and let them share their story with you folks. I'm going to interrupt you guys a little bit here and ask questions along the way and make comments and so on, so don't be surprised. But anyway, I turn it over to you. We're going to be conversational here and ask you to start off with your stories and how you got started and what you're up to now, where you came from. Okay, welcome.
Thanks, Russ, for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Russ. Thank you very much for having us today.
Indeed.
Yeah, so I'll start here. My story, I left school, didn't have many qualifications, didn't really know what I wanted to do. When I was leaving school, the typical path that we were to follow was you left school, you got an apprenticeship, and you earned the trade. You became a trades person to work in construction. I all my friends were doing that, all my mates, my family before me, and the environment we brought it up in, which was a council housing. No money. It wasn't poverty, but it was real low-end stuff. A lot of unemployment, a lot of low wages, and we lived in government housing. So that was kind of the path that was before me, but I never knew what I wanted to do. Started as an apprentice joiner, so left school, went with my mates, and absolutely hated it. I couldn't stand it. It was awful. I was earning when I left school at 16, I was earning the princely sum of £29.50 a week, which was, which was a government paid scheme for businesses to take you on at that time. So I was there a few months, then my dad got promoted, and we moved down to the south of England. So we were based in Dundee in Scotland, and we moved down to the very south coast of England. So that was like going to a different world altogether. Yeah. But I couldn't get an apprenticeship when I was down there. And I must admit, I was kind of glad about that because I did not like it. I hated anything. I was hopeless. I was hopeless at doing anything practical, And so it was just something that you just done blindly. So I got a job in a transport office for a local company down in Kent after a few weeks. And I liked the buzz of... being in that sort of an adult environment, there was a responsibilities there. And I really got the bug for, and felt the pressure and reveled in, being responsible for stuff and using my mind as opposed to my hands. So for me, I think I've always, but I never really wanted to work for anyone, and I don't know where that came from because my family had always worked in the corporate side. No one really started their own business before. No one had taken the faith or the jump or had any capital to do so. But in my world, I'd seen my dad, who always done well in the corporate world, always struggling financially. No matter how well he done, we never had any money when it came to Christmas time or holiday time or anything. And that caused a lot of friction between him and my mum, who were always arguing about money. He was always, chasing his Christmas bonus or stuff like that. So no matter how well he'd done. So for me, I just couldn't understand why, no matter how well you'd done in the corporate world, you were never really going to earn the money that you really needed to have a good, comfortable, enjoyable life. So right. I knew early then that, you know, even though I enjoyed what I was doing, I needed to work for myself. So, but I was in the corporate environment, worked my way up through the ladder, and I eventually sort of quit my job just about 1999, I think it was 2000, and started a small business. That didn't last long. We were supplying vehicles when the internet home shopping at the major supermarkets in the UK just had already started in the US, and we were the supermarkets in the UK were trying to follow the US model, like Webvan and Peapod and they type of companies. So I started, we were supplying vehicles to the supermarkets. Then overnight, they took everything in-house. So our business model was completely wiped out. So that was it. So, and I had three of them almost in a row, but I didn't ever want to go back to mainstream employment. Anyway, after my third failed business, I had not a penny. I was absolutely skint.
How long did that business last?
Well, I think, you know, most of them lasted around 9 months to 18 months maximum. Uh-huh. So, yeah, so they didn't last long. Then I jumped on to the next one, and for various reasons, you know, again, it didn't work out. But they were great lessons. They were the best lessons. Through failure came the toughest of times and the hardest lessons. So it was in 2002, I'm going to come on and just, you know, quickly go through it. In 2002, I caught the tail end of a TV program, and it was Oprah Winfrey interviewing a guy called Robert Kiyosaki. Yep. And he was promoting his book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So I went and bought the book. Now, this was just after my third failed business. Skint, ego-dented, low ebb, and a bad place. And when I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, it was genuinely a light bulb moment that went on in my mind. It was, you know, I really taught me. I had no clue about finances. I had zero financial education in my life. The environment I was exposed to and brought up in had zero financial education, and they were the people I was listening to for advice and all of this stuff. It kind of taught me I was on a hiding to nothing from the start, you know, but I had to go through these painful lessons of business failure. And that was and that was me then. That's really what Rich Dad Poor Dad done for me. You know, I didn't know anything about debt and taxes and leverage and other people's money and other people's time and assets and liabilities. The real definition of that, you know, passive income. And So once I read that book, that was in 2002, I then read everything else written by Robert Kiyosaki and Kim Kiyosaki and other stuff. And I was YouTube and just really immersed myself in personal financial education. And I continued to look at the real estate markets in particular. And in October 2007, Leanne and I quit our jobs on the same day, and we embarked on our journey together in buying real estate right when the financial crash kicked in. It was a good time to buy real estate. Everybody was getting out. We were getting in.
Now, so, that was your first entry into a purchase of real estate? It's 2007?
Yeah.
So you basically studied for 5 years this whole thing of investing in real estate. And based on your history, you probably didn't have a whole lot of capital in your pocket to throw into, say, your first investment. So how did you swing that with more limited capital?
Well, so you're absolutely correct. It took me 5 years to recover from 2002 to 2007, not just financially, but emotionally, confidence, everything. And the markets had to be right for me to get back in again. So the timing had to be all the sort of, you know, the lights kind of had to be at green or amber. You know, they needed to be almost aligned for me to take the next step. And in 2007, that happened. Well, I'll let Leanne tell you her story, because we'll then take you through the journey after we quit our jobs and how we managed to finance it, if that's okay, Russ.
Okay, go for it.
Okay.
This is good because, you know, people that would be watching and are interested in real estate, whether they're where you are or where I am, the thing is the same is typically it takes some money to get this started. And so if you have little or no money, how do you do it? So yeah, we're interested in that part of the tale, that's for sure.
So I have a very similar background to Graham. My family were both, you know, hardworking, had a safe, secure job for life, you know, living in government property. I left school at 16 also, with my GCSEs or, you know, the equivalent in America, but very nothing major. But I was really, really hungry to learn. I was very independent. I moved out of my parents' home when I was 17 and purchased my first residential flat at 17. And I worked my way up the corporate ladder, hungry to be successful, always moving from one company to another. And I remember my father saying, Leanne, you will become unemployable because you, when people look at your CV, it looks like you can't stand a job for any length of time.
We call them a job hopper here in America.
Yeah. But I was never ever unemployed, but I was always, you know, getting promotions within distribution, like transport businesses, but a better level and making more money. Very, very independent, but I just always felt there was something missing. And when I met Graham in 2005, he bought me Rich Woman by Kim Kiyosaki, which I'd never heard of, which I loved, and then read all the Rich Dad's series of books. And then that's where my light bulb moment happened and my financial education started. I'm a bit quicker than Graham because it took me about 3 years to take the leap. But he'd obviously put a lot of work in beforehand.
Oh, wow. So Graham is going through a transformation in his mind, 3 years worth. He meets you. You meet him. Lucky day. Wonderful day.
Yeah.
He met a good partner, Russ. He met a good
cool. And he turns you on to Kim.
Yeah.
He's turned on to Robert, and they're both saying the same thing. Therefore, you're getting the same information, and the light bulbs are going on. The same light bulbs are going on in both of your minds simultaneously. No dragging of the feet in this process, Leanne?
No, do you know, as I said, we're both really hungry people. We want to do well. We want to be successful. And I think when we met, it was like a spark almost, because it was like, let's do this. You know, what are we waiting for? As Graham said, he had done a lot of the studying, a lot of the, you know, the research. The markets were starting to become, you know, a good time to buy. And one of the conversations Graham said, we quit our jobs in the same day.
Yeah, I saw so that.
When we wanted to get involved in property, it was like, well, Graham said, I'll quit my job and you keep bringing the income into the house. And I was like, no, I'll quit my job and I'll focus on it. So there was a bit of this going on. And then we thought, well, why don't, if we're going to do it and going to be very good at it and 100% focused, we need to do it together.
I commend you two for being on the same page in this whole thing, because so many couples, one is on fire and the other's dragging their feet. The other's on fire and the other's dragging their feet. But for you guys to have been on the same page literally from the get-go, that is just a phenomenal thing. And the two of you working together, it's an unbreakable cord, basically, because you can feed off of each other, right? And, you know, because I imagine even when you got into this full time, it may not have gone smoothly 100% right off the bat. And so it was, one of you might have been down. Maybe you can tell me about that. One of you was down and the other one is there encouraging, or vice versa. Did that happen in the early days of 2007 when you jumped ship and went off on your own?
Well, you know, I mean, it's a long time ago now. I think we just had a newborn son as well in October. So it was, if there was ever a time not to quit your job, you know, that it was the time for us. But the markets were correct. And if we firmly believed in what we learned over the years, and we had to commit to it, and the markets were moving and looked favorable for us, we had to really both do that. But I think there was so much, when we quit our jobs, we had enough money only to live off of for 6 months. Uh-huh. We didn't have any capital. We had zero capital to buy the properties. So what we had to do was, and at the time in the UK, you were able to, so we had to get a good deal, and we had to refinance it immediately in order to give us cash out that allowed us then to keep going to buy more and more deals.
Right.
So we were able to do, we actually caught the tail end of it. And one way, we wish we'd started in the good old halcyon days of easy money, but we just caught the very end of it at the start of the financial crash.
Right.
So we quit our jobs at the end of October, and the first deal we'd enough money to do is to the end of March to live off of, or we would have had to have went back to mainstream employment and get a job. We just have that. We didn't have any capital, but what we were able to do, so we bought a property, we bought it significantly under market value, and we were able to refinance it the same day. So we refinanced it, and that allowed us to take cash out right. on the day that we bought it, and that allowed us to live off. We had enough money then to live for another 6 months.
Right.
How
did you bought it and then you refinanced it the same day?
Yes.
So
yes. Yeah.
Did you buy it on like a land contract or something?
We bought it on a, but you got we bridging loan. We got a bridging loan to buy bridge loan, which was repaid the same day. So
okay.
We'd already set up a refinance. We only managed to do four of them. So it was four of them, but that four gave us, generated enough capital. We were able to keep on going and keep on going and just keep repeating it. So we didn't have any capital initially. We had to go and get a great deal. And we had an impending event because we only had to march, or we were going to have to go back to work again.
Right.
Just to back Graham up there and then answer your question, Russ, Graham and I both work really well when we're under pressure, when we've got impending events. We seem to work better and be more successful, I feel like. You know, we actually just make things happen when there's a bit of pressure there. I think if we're not under pressure,
uh-huh.
we're bored.
That's interesting. A lot of people collapse under pressure, but you guys just get going.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good trait to have, that's for sure.
Uh-huh. So we done that. So then what we done was we had a plan that, you know, we had to earn enough money to become financially free within 3 years. But doing what we done, and we just kept repeat and kept going, kept working hard, kept recycling the money, refinancing out, using it as equity in the next, and just churning the money and getting the deals in, we became financially free within 12 months. So it happened that quickly for us.
You, how many months?
12 months, yeah. So within a year.
So you beat your goal by 2 years.
Yeah, we did.
My, oh my. How large was that first property that you purchased? Are multi-families? These are multi-families?
No, these were all single-family homes.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So single-family residential. And you bought one.
We bought one.
And then you turned around and added to that.
Bought another one. Then over the years, we just obviously, we got more experience, we got better at it, we started buying small portfolios of six or eight. Then, you know, we'd buy,
I was out at a Christmas night out one night, and I met a solicitor I knew, and he'd introduced me to a guy that was selling a portfolio of 55 properties, and he said, "What do you do?" And I said, "I buy property, I'll be at your office on Monday to see you." And then the rest is history. So we just, the portfolio sizes started getting bigger
and
bigger.
That's cool. And your specialty is single family?
It was. We've done, you know, obviously that was back 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12. Now, you know, 12 years later, we've done, you know, developments, developing old, converting old buildings, schools, banks, you know, hotels into residential, maybe blocks of apartments.
So you buy a commercial, like a large commercial building, offices and stuff, and you'd convert that into apartment complex?
Yeah.
Man, you've really diversified.
Yeah.
It's one thing to diversify from single family residences to multifamily, but you're really diversifying your diversification, aren't you?
Well, for us, it just seemed natural. It just seemed natural progression. You know, that was just, there was opportunities we can see. We understand the market. We understand the demand for rentals. It just seemed natural, you know, natural. I mean, we have office buildings now, commercial. We have
student accommodation.
So we've just over the years, it's always been property related. And we now own companies that look after the buildings now. So service and facilities management, businesses that maintain and look after and upgrade buildings. So it's just kind of been, Ross, just an extension of what we started out, which was to buy one single family home.
One, right. When you purchased that first one with the bridge and then refinanced, did you have any struggle getting approval for the for the refinance?
None. And we had that lined up because that was what everyone was doing back in the day. That was a normal transaction. So the struggle was getting the deal at the right price where we can make the numbers work, because a bridge is expensive even for one day, just with fees in and fees out, and you've got legal costs. So the deal had to be right. And that was the only struggle. The refinance was just part and parcel of what was available in terms of financing at that. It didn't last long, unfortunately, or would have been even further ahead, you know.
was that property rented at the time, or was it? Okay,
yeah, so it was a sale and rent back. So we immediately got refinanced out of it, got some capital. It was immediately cash flowing because it was a sale and rent back, and there was still a significant chunk of equity in the deal for the end. So should we come to sell it? So that kind of became our mantra for our model. When we're looking at any type of property, it's 1, 2, 3. You know, can we get a bit of cash out on day one by the way we finance it? 2, it must cash flow. And 3, there must be equity in it for us at the end. So the equity is your safety net if in case prices dip or, you know, there's a draw. But we're taking a long-term view at it. So we're kind of fine with it, provided we get, you know, we like eat today. We get a bit. We're not precious on that. It must cash flow because it must generate cash. And 3, it's got equity, you know, at the end. We haven't taken all the goodness out of it, you know, now.
Have you sold some of these properties?
Yes, well, yeah, we've been selling them the last few years. The market's changed. They're too small for us now, a number of them. As they became vacant, we'll sell them. The prices were good.
It was a great time to sell the last couple of years. So the markets were higher than what they've been.
Wow. So then what have you done with the proceeds of those sales? Bought more of everything? Specializing in one thing or the other?
No, I mean, we invest in, we're looking at businesses and business opportunities more than real estate in the last few years.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, man. And where are all these properties? Are they back in Great Britain? Are they
UK.
In Dubai?
No, UK. And we have some investments down in Spain also.
I see. So you no doubt have property managers located where the properties are or nearby to oversee everything. And they maintain everything fine for you and keep the properties in good shape and so on. And all these years, you've been a student of Robert Kiyosaki. Would you say that he's the one that taught you everything you know about this business?
He was the guy that led the way.
Okay.
And opened the door in terms of context.
Okay.
And context and the understanding and why I suppose real estate is such a, you know, is such a good investment if you get the right project at the right price and all that stuff. So he definitely opened that door. But in terms of, you know, the content, you know, the how to,
or growth.
Then no, we've had many other mentors that have assisted with that. And listen, there's no better teacher than getting in and actually going through the process of buying a property and
making the mistakes.
You know.
Yep, that takes a lot of nerve, and I commend the two of you for having that joint quality of mutual nerve to allow you to step out on a limb, as it were. And embark on this new thing where it was totally different than your backgrounds. You know, a lot of people are just, you know, here in America, you know, there's the big American dream is to own your own home. But I maintained for many years that the second American dream is to be self-employed, to have your own business. And that takes guts. That takes risk. And you guys are, you know, you're examples of that and what that has done for you. Now you're branching out from real estate into like purchasing businesses and cash flowing those businesses. Any particular type of business that you gravitate toward?
We're operating in different sectors now, but anything that is where we can add value to the future. So, for example, renewable energy or repurposing older buildings and making them, decarbonizing them and making them more energy efficient and new type of heating systems and still getting away from gas boilers to air source heat pumps. And we like that cleaner technology stuff, but they're all building related. So we like that. We like to play our part in the transition to, you know, a greener planet, if you like, a greener world. Healthcare as well, you know, how can we work, you know, how can we impact and longevity and play our piece? So anything sort of medical and medical related, we like that side of it. AI is another one, you know, with the future and the potential within the AI space. That's something I've got a real interest in that sector. At the moment, just with the potential that could add to life and to humans and for everyone. So anything that based, of course, you know, real estate, people need to live places, you know, they need to good affordable housing. So it's really just an extension of what we've always done. Yeah.
I like the healthcare because people are living longer. They're spending more on their quality of life. You know, there's people paying more, they're not depending on the government. They're actually, you know, seeking better medical advice elsewhere. They're aesthetically, people are, you know, doing their hair, their teeth. You know, so there's a lot of money spent in the whole healthcare sector.
Uh-huh. I saw that in your bio that reference was made a couple of times to fragmented sectors.
Yes.
Fragmented market space. Mm-hmm. What the areas that you were just describing, you consider those the fragmentation in the business world?
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. for those things, you know, you might have realtors working on your behalf, finding properties, and they may call you and say, hey, I found this property, so-and-so. Do you have that, or are you doing all of that kind of research yourself?
No, we have many external, whether it's agents or advisors that approach us and look at it. We are hunters also, though. We don't sit back and wait. We are out hunting. You know, okay. We've been doing that since day one. We got our first property deal. We went out looking for it. You know, very, very rarely do we have anything that's, or we're buying anything that's on the open market where we're competing on price or with others. You know, we like to go knocking on doors or, you know, off market. They're the best deals.
I see. And then for this, for these other market areas that you're going into, the business world and so on, are you doing all of that yourself too? Or do you have like business brokers shopping for you, so to speak, and bringing, you know, opportunities your way?
It's not really business brokers. We have, we speak to brokers, but we've never really done a deal through a broker. As Graham says, we're hunters. We have many funnels where opportunities come. So different sectors, we have different criteria. So we know what we're looking for in a specific sector. And then we go and hunt. So we've got companies that go and we'll give them our criteria and they go and contact the companies that we're looking for that fit the criteria. So the criteria might be, you know, companies that are turning over 10 million plus in a certain sector, in a certain location, and then they hunt on our behalf.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. And so you're in Dubai. These opportunities that you're mostly looking at, I suspect, are in Great Britain. Doing a long distance talking and traveling, I suppose.
We travel a lot. We're just back from the US. We were looking at some opportunities. US is a big market for us this year. We've done our first. We've got our first partnership down in Florida, which we've been working on since the beginning of last year. So that's now taken off in January. We were over in Los Angeles. That's a bit further behind and might not happen. But and Texas is another area for us. So we're working with local partners in those areas that have the skill set, the wherewithal, and the means to deliver it. But what we provide is the strategic business support in order for these companies to get in the game through acquisition. And we want to grow it with a clear plan because they're fragmented markets all over the world. So we're a partnership business. So we've just, as we've grown, you know, we're based in Dubai now. We look at the world as our investment as opposed to where we were. Just up in the Highlands of Scotland, Russ. You know, it was a pretty limited market.
No doubt. Where in Florida are you looking? Are you working?
Well, they were down in Fort Lauderdale. We met in Orlando. What was it? I can't remember. There was a down the coast there, down.
Southwest. You didn't go to Daytona Beach while you were in Orlando? That's where I'm going.
No, we didn't make it there. No.
When we were there, Russ, it was the worst week you've had weather wise.
In Orlando.
You mean it was cold or rainy?
Cold.
This has been. We moved here from Wisconsin, the Upper Midwest, in 1998, and I usually don't remember from year to year weather things, but it just seems to me that this is the coldest winter that I remember living down here. My wife is from northern Wisconsin, so she grew up in super cold weather, 40 degree below weather, you know, temperature, and that's Fahrenheit, before they had invented wind chill. So it was super cold. When it gets cold down here now, she says, I want to move south. And somebody said to her one time, well, you know, it's not that much warmer in Miami than it is in Daytona Beach. And she said, well, no, when I said I want to move south, I meant I want to move to the equator. She gets cold just like that. And it's really kind of funny, but even I've been suffering. It's been super cold. So anyway, back to business. You guys are amazing and you're developing an international reach from just two people that were just floundering, basically, wondering what's going on, one a business failure and the other one just not satisfied in what the business world, I would say, huh, Leanne? You met this guy, this couple, Robert and Kim, and went on, and golly gee, what a story. Any advice that you could pass on to somebody who is kind of maybe where you came from, where you were at, and thinking there's got to be more out there. What can I do? How can I do better with my life? Any advice you could throw out to somebody as we wrap this up?
For me, take action. Just go out and do it. You know, don't spreadsheet the life out of an idea that you have. You know, do your homework. But you can kill things. You can kill ideas by spreadsheeting them too much. So take the risk, the calculated risk, but take action. You know, you won't get anywhere sitting thinking about things.
All right. Do your homework. Find out where you want to go.
Yeah.
And pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Pull the trigger and go. Pull the trigger.
Mm-hmm. You know, pull the trigger.
Pull
yeah.
the trigger.
Take a calculated risk. Oh. That, I think, separates the men from the boys and really anything, is that pulling the trigger, the risk, you know, and especially when there's a couple involved, husband and wife, and one is for and the other's against. All right, so how do they resolve that? And that's why I said early on is you guys are really blessed that you've been on the same page from the get-go. So
Ross, we took a conscious decision, and rightly or wrongly, we took a conscious decision, and we spoke about it, that we would continue to be on the same page. Now, so we learn together, we are in business together, every part of it. So is when we're doing stuff, we're doing it. Now that might slow us down, and the likelihood is it has slowed us down, because one of us can be off at a faster pace than the other. But we're okay with that. That's fine with us. Because in life and business, it's important to us that we have this right partner, you know, in our life and our business. So therefore, then it just makes things that much easier. So I've seen that, you know, a number of my friends could never work with a wife or their partner or and never in a million years, you know, they can think of nothing worse. And when they get home, they have nothing to talk about. You know, and there's fighting, and, you know, is that you speaking, you know, you can't go to work or you're going to miss this. You know, we don't have that. We don't have that. We just have our life. But that was a conscious thing. And I think, you know, in terms of advice, you have to have good partners, whether it's a business partner. You can't do a good deal with a bad partner. You need to have that. And that's first. And, you know, again, if you cut through all the stuff and all the backstory with, you know, failed businesses and time and Leanne's background and my background, really all came together when we met and had good partner that's allowed us, you know, to be free and to focus, to be able to focus on what it is that we both want.
We set our goals together, Russ. You know, we set our goals together and we hold each other accountable. And we cheer each other on. So if we're doing well, you know, we cheer each other on. But if we're slacking and not achieving what we've set out to do, it's really sore getting that feedback from your partner.
Yeah.
You know, so it really pushes you to strive to be the best.
It's not all a bed of roses, you know, I can assure you. You know, we get the clash at times.
No doubt.
But, look, we wouldn't have it any other way. You know,
yeah, it's what you mentioned friends and stuff. Have you got friends that they want to do kind of what you guys have done, but they're not in unity, husband and wife? Have you had opportunity to kind of counsel and help anybody get more acclimated to be on the same page? What would you?
We've tried that previously, and one thing that doesn't work is sort of ramming it down someone's throat, you know, blah, blah, blah. It just has the complete opposite reaction. What we try and do, and it's not just with friends or family, it's with everybody, is just lead by example and let others see, you know, the success or the hard work or otherwise of us. So our approach to it is very much, we'll lead by example, because as soon as we start, we're trying to be somebody's guru or we know better. That's not us anyway. So that we'll have a bigger impact on people and people that we care about and or want the best for by leading by example and by doing and being and staying true to that than ramming it down their throat. And like I said,
good point. And that's good for, say, a husband that has a passion to branch out, to do something. And the wife is not so excited about it. Maybe she's negative. Maybe she's just neutral, but she's not with him. And for him to show her what he can develop is probably stronger. It resonates stronger than him trying to lambaste her and force it onto her. That's gotta be a better thing to have it. To have the spouse on the same page and in unity with us guys, I think is really important. And it works the same. It works the opposite way too. You know, the wife wants to go off, and the husband is, I don't know about this. You know, so she says, "Well, listen, I'm going to show you what I can do, and then someday you'll probably join me, and hopefully that'll happen." So anyway, do some homework. Calculated risk, take action, have a good partner, and not just a spouse, but just a business partner, a working partner, because everybody needs somebody to help them along the way, right? Mm-hmm. So we, you know, we can be in business for ourselves, but if we're by ourselves, that's kind of dangerous, I think, because we just have only us to rely on. So somebody that can act as a guide and a mentor along the way, leading by example, that's so important as well. Anything else come to mind?
Well, I think that's enough there. You know, I think there are key points. I think, you know, and commit to it. You know, yeah, I personally don't believe in side hustles, in, you know, in part-time, or I'll do it, you know, at the weekends and all that stuff. I don't get that. I don't buy it if you want to really make a difference. And I think if you're going to do it, you have to have commitment and skin in the game. You know, if you don't have skin in the game, I've never seen it work, you know, on a part-time basis. So that's why we took the massive leap, terrifying at the time, but went for it. And it puts you under, you know, you've got to take that, you've got to get going. There's no time for, you know, slacking.
Yeah, right on. Well, and you spent, what was it, 5 years getting your ducks in a row, your mind in a row, and your finances in a row so that you could pull the plug on your day-to-day job. And so that would be important for somebody that wants to go off on their own in the business for themselves, is to have some kind of a nest egg. Otherwise, they are forced to, like you said, a side hustle or a weekend business in hopes that will grow. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. The thing that may cause it not to work is the skin in the game. It's not a do or die thing because, well, you know, if this doesn't work, I can just keep doing what I've been doing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then you've got too much of a plan B and a back door you can run through. So good advice in that area. So if somebody would like a little more input from you, are you open to conversing with people and just chatting? Have you got a way that people can contact you, a website or something?
Yeah, sure. So they can get us at thecarlinggroup.co.uk. That's a website.
Carling Group.
The Carling Group.
The Carling Group. Okay.
Thecarlinggroup.co.uk. Or on LinkedIn is best for both of us.
Yep.
I'm graeme.carling, graeme.carling.
And leanne.carling on LinkedIn.
Okay. The two of you got your own site, basically. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, folks, you need some extra advice from this couple, this amazing, dynamic, prospering couple and growing couple, go to their website. Check them out on LinkedIn and see what they've got to offer to you one-on-one, basically. So I think that's it for today, folks. Thank you for tuning in. It's been a pleasure getting to know you two all the way around the world, basically. And next time you're in Florida, give me a call. We'll go out to dinner. Yeah.
Thanks,
Fort Lauderdale or Orlando or points in between. Yeah, indeed. That'd be great. So anyway, just want to say goodbye, folks. Again, thanks for watching. Anything I can do for you, that's rstcoachingacademy.com. Phone number 386-286-2450. Give me a call. Hit the website. I'm here to help. Sales training, business coaching, and so on. We're all in this together in a big way. You know, we're doing what we're doing, but part of that is trying to help people, trying to help the environment and where we live, and make the world a better place once we leave, you know, so people can be thankful and say, I'm glad they were here because it really had an effect on my life. So any final words before we shut down for the day?
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, appreciate that. Thanks for your time, Russ. Appreciate that.
Well, it's been great. Been great getting to know you, and hopefully we'll be in touch again, especially when you come over here and look me up. So anyway, folks, we'll say over and out for now. Until next time on Money Talks. All right, take care and bye bye.
Hi, thanks for being here today for another episode of Money Talks. I hope it was informative and encouraging to you. If it struck a chord in your heart, or if you have any questions or comments, please let us know. Visit us at rstcoachingacademy.com, call 386-286-2450, or send an email to email@rstcoachingacademy.com. Thanks again, and until next time, be great.